Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, and I'm so excited to have you here today, and I'm so excited to talk to my friend, Lauren McAfee. Lauren is an author. She is just an incredible person, and I love this new book that her and her husband wrote called Beyond Our Control, Let Go of Unmet Expectations, Overcome Anxiety, and Discover Intimacy with God. Lauren has several books that she has published, including Only One Life, Not What You Think. She also wrote that book with her husband, The Legacy Study, and Created in the Image of God. She's currently pursuing her PhD in ethics and policy. She's the founder and visionary of Stand for Life and also serves as a ministry director of Hobby Lobby. She is an incredible person, and some of the things that her and her husband have gone through in these past several years have been pretty traumatic, and she wrote a book about when these things happen, when we feel out of control, when we've tried to do everything we can to make sure life is tidy and is in our control, and then everything unravels. And so I know a lot of us have had that happen in our lives. And if we haven't yet, something I'm sure will be beyond our control. And so I'm just thrilled that she's here to talk with us today. I think you are going to love this interview as much as I did. Please welcome Lauren McAfee. Lauren, thanks so much for being on the Be Love, Do Good podcast. It's so fun to connect with you. I don't think I've seen you since we lived in Oklahoma City. So it's so fun to be on the screen together and talking about your new book, Beyond Our Control. Can't wait to talk about it today.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to see you again.
I know. Dear and near to my heart is Oklahoma City. It will always be one of my most favorite places to live. And people always giggle when we tell them where we've lived, all the different places. They're like, well, what is one of your favorites? And I'm like, Oklahoma City. They're like, really? I'm like, really?
That's awesome.
I know. I love it there. So yeah, it's when it's...
It is a good place to live, and people don't expect it. I'm not surprised people would sound surprised that you liked Oklahoma, but... It is a unassuming place that is actually really surprisingly fun.
It's trendy. It's got great food. It's some of my favorite food. And then it has blown up even since we've left in the past, whatever, 10 years. It has blown up even more. So just for listeners, if you haven't been to Oklahoma City, it's like the best little big city, I guess, is what I would say.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good way of saying it.
Little Big City. Awesome. Okay, so I want to dig into your new book. I was so intrigued with it and just the different stories that you're kind of sharing in here, and your vulnerability is so raw, and I just appreciate it so much, and I think so many people will see themselves in your situation, just whether it be exactly what you've gone through or other things. But I love, first of all, actually, I don't love the name of your book, Beyond Our Control, because it means that we, wait, are you saying we don't have control? So tell me a little bit, before you kind of maybe experienced some of the hardships that you have in your family, before you wrote the book, were you a person who felt like you had control over your life, or maybe thought you could, or was that something that you just always knew you didn't?
Yeah, I think, so control is comfortable, right? I mean, if we, you know, control something, that means that we know what to expect, and that's obviously more comfortable than things being out of control. So growing up, I would say, you know, theoretically, I knew I couldn't control everything, but you kind of, you know, growing up, you think like, okay, well, maybe if I just work hard enough and kind of do the right things, then you'll be able to control some things in your life. Like maybe it's surely I'll, you know, get married, or I'll be able to work hard and get into college, or work hard and find a job. And certainly in my life, those things had played out and seemed to be true up until a certain point in my life when I realized that life circumstances came at me, that control seemed very distant, and I realized it was more of a facade, like a thing that I thought I had that really I had no control in my life over certain things. And so it's definitely an uncomfortable thing to walk through those moments of life where you realize you have a lot less control over things happening in your life than you thought you had. And in my own life, when those moments hit, it was something that kind of shook my foundation in a way that made me kind of think through, okay, if I thought I had control over some of these things in my life, and I really don't, then like what else is going, like what else do I wrongly believe? And it's kind of one of those moments in your life where you have to reevaluate how you think about life and what you expected for life that can be, a bit disorienting. And that's certainly how I felt in my life when things felt out of control.
Tell us a little bit about some of those things. What was one of those things that made you go, whoa, this feels way out of my control and I don't know quite what to do?
Yeah. So whenever my husband and I got married, we were still in college because we were high school sweethearts. We got married in college. And when we got to the point that we were, you know, wanting to think about kids and start our family, we wanted to pursue adoption. That had always been something that we were considering as plan A for us. So whenever we started the adoption process, we knew that we were wanting to pursue international adoption, and international adoption can take a couple years, you know, 3 or 4 years at the most sometimes. And when we got into the process, doors kept closing, things kept not working out, and we were 5 and 6 years into the adoption process with still no end in sight. And so we thought, okay, you know, you want to, you know, achieve this adoption, you do the paperwork, you fill out the stuff, you do the interviews with the social worker, and like it works out. And over half a decade into it, we still had nothing to show for years and years and years of working towards this. And that was really frustrating. And so we thought, well, like while we're trying the adoption, like let's also try and start our family biologically. And then fast forward years and years and years of trying biologically, and we still had not been able to get pregnant. And so certainly trying to have children was something that was completely beyond our control, that was painful to have this deep longing, yet, and it was for a good thing, yet it continued to go unfulfilled. So then we finally, 7 years into the adoption process, did adopt our daughter, Zion, from China. And we were so grateful. We finally had a daughter, and we brought her home. And 7 weeks after we brought Zion into our family, she was surprisingly diagnosed with cancer. So that was another incredibly painful moment, just a real significant pain point in my life where I had no control. I mean, there was nothing I could do to fix the cancer. Like, it was completely out of my hands. We were reliant on hospitals and doctors and prayers and support of others holding us up in that season of her cancer experience. And so certainly my unexpected kind of moments feeling out of control were wrapped up around parenthood. And people's circumstances might look different, but at the root of it, I could point to my own false expectation about having control and wanting control, right? I mean, in those moments, I could see the ways that I was trying to control other areas of my life because I was wanting to grasp at control of anything, because there's felt so out of control, either in the infertility and adoption journey or in our daughter's cancer diagnosis. And our daughter is, in remission from cancer now. Thankfully, she's over three years in remission. But those beyond our control seasons are pain points. And I know every person can kind of think of those moments in their own life where something they had that was an expectation of what their life might look like that wasn't panning out, or kind of those things like our daughter's cancer that just kind of hit you and blindside you, where you're having to process, okay, what did I expect for life? And how am I going to process this not working out?
I was going to say, like, it sounds, you know, like you hear the stories of like all the things that happen to people and they're like, and then I just trusted God and it was great. I'm betting that's not what happened. Like in the grand scheme of things, yes, that is probably what you got to, because that's, you probably were at your deepest, lowest point. I've found that we've had some things that have rocked our world where I thought I was all in control because we did all the right things. And then things blew up and you're like, wait a second. And you get to really all you can do is surrender. But I'm guessing that didn't come, maybe it came naturally to you, but I'm guessing it wasn't the first thing like, oh, well, God's in control. Tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah. So my initial response, really looking back at those seasons, is I can see that I was grasping to control, like I said, other areas of my life. And that only brought me more anxiety and didn't bring me the peace and comfort that I was looking for in trying to, you know, grasp for those control pieces myself. So it was definitely not the first response. I mean, I would have said, yeah, like we're trying to trust God. We know he's good. We know he's sovereign. But certainly my actions showed me that my heart was actually believing something mm-hmm. different as I was seeking for control and only getting more and more anxious. And my friend, Dr. John Townsend, is a psychologist, and he's mentioned before in books that he's written that the negative emotion most closely associated with the concept of control is anxiety. Mm. And so the more we try to control, then actually the more anxious we can become, because we know deep down we actually can't control as much as we think we can or want to. So I certainly see that
Did that rock your world when he said that? Did that, were you like, wait, what?
Yes, it was like, oh my goodness. I was like, that makes so much sense. And I could like see, I was like playing it out of my head, like, oh my goodness, yeah. Thinking back on all of those points in my life. Yeah,
because
control and anxiety certainly went
because
hand
you
in
probably
hand.
Didn't see yourself, and I'm giggling only because this just literally happened to me last month, where our counselor was like, "I feel like you've been functioning with probably high functioning anxiety your whole life because you like to control things." And I'm like, "Wait," I was like, "I'm not even a controlling yeah. person," and she's yeah. like, "Let's talk about that." She's like, "Let's figure
That's so good.
Because in our mind, I was like, I don't like to control the things, but as I started to dig and wonder why I was so anxious about the thing, it was because all the things were out of my control. So yeah, walk me through a little bit even of your anxiety. I know that was that something new for you? Like for me, never in my life had I had anxiety. I mean, I am like not cool as a cucumber, but like, you know, everything was good. It was great. And when I started to get anxiety, I thought I was just having a heart attack. I was like, I'm probably going to just die of a heart attack. Something's happening. And they're like, that's called anxiety. Yes. I'm like, oh, what's that? So was this like, had you been experiencing this your whole life? Or was this like, surprise?
Yeah, no, it was like surprise for me too. So we're probably similar in that. So it's really great to hear your experience because mine was similar. So I would say I was not a anxious person. I would say I was, you know, pretty... not typically anxious. Sure, you know, there's moments, but I thought that I was really fine. And I think anxiety for me had to hit me in physical manifestations in order for it to get my attention to say, hey, like you actually have some anxiety here that you haven't processed. And so for me, that was in the form of panic attacks. Mm. So about 6 to 9 months after our daughter went into remission, we had, you know, our daughter went into remission. We kind of went back to life as normal because it was happy news, right? You just kind of move forward. But I really had not processed the fear and anxiety and despair of having to watch my daughter walk mm-hmm. through a potentially life-threatening disease. We had just, like, when it was remission, it was like, okay, like, move on. So months after that, that anxiety came up in the form of panic attacks for me as a way of reminding me that I had gone through this incredibly fearful and anxious season, and I really had not ever taken the time mm-hmm. to process that. And so I one day specifically, I was having the panic attack, and for me, I was having chest pain, and it lasted for more than 5 hours. And so I eventually ended up in the emergency room because, you know, you have chest pain and you don't take that lightly. Yeah. So I really was like, man, maybe I'm like, this is it. So yeah, it ended up, everything was fine. It was just that the anxiety coming up in the form of a panic attack. And so even though I would not have said I was anxious, I had not done the work of processing and making space for my grief and my emotions through the form of lament in a way that could help me heal and process that anxiety and come to the other side of it and find that peace and comfort. And so, yeah, I think anxiety can show up in a lot of different ways for people. And even if, like you and I both, like, wouldn't have said we were anxious necessarily, but certainly it impacted us. Mm-hmm. And so in my book, I have an entire chapter dedicated to grief and anxiety, like one chapter for each of those, to help people think through some of the ways that can show up so they can kind of analyze, okay, do I have some underlying anxiety that I haven't dealt with? And two, one of the ways that we can process our anxiety is by going through the process of lament and really lament is expressed grief. So expressing our grief about the things that have caused us anxiety. And as we go through that process, it can bring about healing and lower the anxiety in our lives. So hopefully there's going to be some practical stuff.
Yeah, I think two things I hear you saying. Like, one, you were probably in the trenches of, like, when you have a trauma or your kiddo had cancer or people go through whatever it is, you're in the trenches of it so much that you're like at the hospital, you're doing the appointments, you don't have time to grieve it. And I think there's a piece right. that when it's done, you're expected to be like, God be the glory, we're so grateful. And so to feel the anxiousness after, this was me, I'm telling my kind of thing, is when after a traumatic event happened, it's like people expect, especially if you're Christian, thank you, God, be so grateful. So then when you're still having panic attacks, anxiety after, that's like, I don't know, I felt guilt about that. Like, why can't I get over this?
Yeah.
Why am I still struggling with this? That was that came up for me.
Yeah. And I think that especially in Christian circles, I think it can be seen as a lack of faith if we don't just, we're not just now okay and, you know, say like, oh, it's okay, I trust in the Lord. And I think we do a real disservice to who we are as created in God's image by not affirming and accepting the part of us that has emotions. So we were created as, you know, as human beings in God's image, and God himself has emotions. And Jesus certainly on earth experienced the fullness of what it means to be human. He was fully God, fully man. And as a human, had emotions. You know, Jesus wept at, you know, when we read about him finding out about Lazarus and seeing the response to those sad about Lazarus. So when we try and say that we shouldn't have those emotions or we can't have anxiety or fear or grief, then we're not honoring the way that the Lord created us as emotional beings. Yeah. And so emotions can be helpful indicators, and they can tell us something about what we're experiencing. We should be informed by our emotions. Our emotions shouldn't control us, but they should inform us. And so as we process our emotions, we can bring those to the Lord and we should bring them to others in community to be able to process that. And it's okay that we don't immediately feel, oh, we're just like happy and everything's fine, because that's not how feelings work, right? I mean, it's like, it's a process of processing emotions and reminding ourselves of truth. Yes. Like in my fear, I can remind my heart that God is in control, but I still can feel fearful and that's okay. And just to continue to remind myself of the Lord's faithfulness. And so,
it's that fine line.
Yeah. Hope that people remember that and be encouraged by that it's okay to have emotions.
I understand how much of a challenge it can be to keep your family focused on Jesus during the Christmas season. Even with the best intentions, the hustle and the bustle of the season can get the best of us. It can feel like a challenge to find really great resources that point our kids to Jesus and not just presents during this season. I want to let you know that Christian Parenting is releasing a new Advent devotional made just for kids to help with this. Jesus, Light of the World, will help kids understand how Jesus was a light that came to heal and save a hurting and broken world. Each day of Jesus, Light of the World includes daily scripture, a devotional to help kids develop a deep and personal relationship with Jesus, engaging activities, a prayer, and a go activity that encourages kids to take ownership of their faith in their everyday lives. It's a great tool to help you teach your children the true meaning and significance of the Christmas season. For more information and to get your copy, head over to cpgive.org. Again, that's cpgive.org. I think it's the fine line of, like, for me, I'm like, okay, how do I express the emotion because it's still there, but how do I not catastrophize or be controlled by the feeling and be start trusting in a truth that I might not really maybe feel or believe at this moment? So tell me about that. Tell me about kind of that of not being controlled by this emotion, but at the same time feeling like you can, you know, express it. I mean, maybe talk to me about the lament process for you, what that looked like for you.
Yeah, so the lament process has been a learning experience for me. I think it was not something that came naturally for me, and probably a lot of people feel that way. But I'm not a very emotionally expressive person. And so for me, it was really helpful to, I read a psychologist, Dr. Diane Langberg, had decades of experience as a therapist. And she said, and this was helpful for me because they all started with the letter T, so I could remember it, that grief and processing emotions takes time, tears, and talking. And so that was a really helpful blueprint for me to think through, okay, what does this mean to, you know, have the feelings about something, to have grief about something, and knowing that, okay, first of all, talking with God and with my community, you know, my close, trusted friends, is a really helpful step, because as we express that and get it out, it helps us to metabolize it. To allow myself to have tears, knowing that it is okay to cry and it is good to allow that, again, that expression to happen so that we can metabolize the emotions. And then just knowing that it's also going to take time. You know, it's not an immediate thing. It's not like, okay, I cried once and so it's gone. It's like it's going to take time, and it might be multiple times of talking it through, crying about it, you know, expressing that emotion before we kind of are able to feel like we're moving in the right direction with processing those emotions. Yeah,
that's good. Talk to me a little bit. I think when we are in a marriage and tragedy happens, there are usually two things that happen. One is you separate because you don't know how to communicate or talk about the tragedy. So one of you grieves one way, one of you grieves another. That's confusing. The second thing that can happen is it can bring you closer together. So talk to me for those who maybe are married and going through a huge grief or trauma, how do you stay connected during that?
I think that's an important question, and one that couples should think about, especially in advance of something painful happening, but certainly those who have already are walking in it now or have walked it. You said it exactly right. I mean, that can either be a catalyst for growing closer together, or it can often, more often, it's a catalyst for, especially if it's a significant loss, more often that leads to a separation. And I think the statistic is pretty high in terms of marriages ending when there's been a significant loss, specifically around a child loss. And I knew that because I had a friend walk through the death of a child through because of cancer. And I remember them talking that through. And so, you know, I had the gift of having that, you know, insight and their encouragement and their example of seeing how they navigated the loss of their child and leaning into the Lord and leaning into one another in their marriage. And so for Michael and I, whenever we were in the midst of the cancer experience with our daughter, and then I hadn't mentioned this yet, but we did have a son that we were in the process of adopting. We brought him home from the hospital into our family when he was a newborn. He lived with us for a year, and he was our son, and we were in the adoption process when the legal things were affected by COVID, and so the finalization was delayed, and then an unusual situation came up with a family member, and after having our son for 12 months, we had to hand him over in a matter of 2.5 hours.
Oh,
we were told
my
we had
gosh.
2.5 hours to say goodbye forever to our son, who had been our son for a year. He called me mom. He'd only ever known us as mom and dad.
Ugh.
And that was a really painful, incredibly painful loss. And I haven't seen my son since. And that was almost 2 years now that he's been gone.
So sorry.
So, yeah, in the pain of that, though, and in the wake of just the grief from that loss, I could see that my husband and I processed our grief differently. And so that was hard because I had to learn to have grace for him and how he processed and when he was processing. And he had to have grace for me in terms of how I needed to process. And I think really the biggest thing that I've learned coming out of that was just high levels of grace for one another and high levels of support, as much as you can be there for one another. And so in my husband and I's experience, you know, we kind of went in and out of our deepest and darkest moments of grief at different times, which in some ways was helpful because we had our other daughter. And so we still had to be caring for her and doing, you know, living life. And so kind of when he was just needing that space and in that dark moment of grief, I could kind of step in and help, and then vice versa. And so lots of grace and just trying to support one another the best we could, and also having good community around us who knew that they were going to check in on us. They were helping take care of us, but they were also encouraging us toward one another. And so that was huge. And so I would encourage, you know, if you can get community and family to wrap around you, and family that's going to be, you know, thinking about wanting to support you as a couple too, as well as just a family in our loss, that was incredibly helpful.
I bet. Thank you for sharing that. As we kind of finish up our time together, I feel like we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. We probably have similar journeys, but could you just talk to the person who might be listening, who's in the deep, deep trenches of grief, the one who feels like, and I don't know if you ever felt this, but felt like, I will never be happy again. I will never be joyful again. Yeah. And I'm a very joyful person. I love life so much. And when you walk through life like that for 42 years, that's your life. You love life. Like I wake up and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get all of it, you know. And then when one day you wake up and you're like, I don't feel like I'll ever feel like that again. I'll never have joy. I actually don't love life. And I'm never going to feel like that again. When they, you know, I know that's so dramatic. And of course, you do come through that, you know, you do come to the other side. But for someone who might be in the trenches of just the deepest, darkest, and I don't make light of it, it's the worst feeling. What would you say to them?
Yeah, it really is the worst. The first thing I would say is just like, I wish that for the person that is listening that might feel like they're in that moment, I just wish I gave you a hug and tell you, you know, you're not alone. And I know for me, when I was in my kind of most painful and darkest moments of grief, I found it. So as a person of faith and who's had a faith for a long time, I found it hard to want to rely on my faith, my faith community. It was hard for me to ask people for things and support, and it was hard for me to go to God because I think I was just in so much pain that it was hard to see to the goodness of who God is, that even though he was in control, he knew that we were going to have a son for a year and knowing that he would leave our home. And so the thing I would encourage people is I get that whenever you just feel like you don't want to lean into your faith and you don't want to lean into your people, do it anyway, the best that you can. And for me, that was even in like my prayers, I keep a prayer journal. And so for years, I write my prayers in a journal at night. And I remember that the prayer journal entries in the week after that we lost our son, I mean, it was like two words. It would be like, God help. And like, that was all I could do. And so I was clinging, just barely clinging to my faith. But looking back, I can also see that God was clinging to me. He was holding me and he was there in the pain. And his character has come through over and over in my life. And it came through in that moment of pain and despair as well. And then also, not to isolate. And so I mentioned community. It's so important to allow your community in, ask them for help, and it's okay to express what your needs are. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a lot of friends who wanted to support us, but they didn't know how.
Yeah.
And so it was a gift to them whenever I would say, like, hey, this would be really meaningful if you can do, you know, X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z. And so those are things that, like, when you're in that darkest of seasons, don't give up on your faith and don't isolate yourself from your community. Mm-hmm. And whatever that looks like, even then, there's the littlest bit that you can, reach out. Reach out to your Heavenly Father that loves you, and reach out to your people who want to support you.
That's good. Well, I am so excited for people to just hear more of your story and, like, hear a little bit more in depth of what you guys went through and how you got through that and kind of the messy middle I know is in there. And tell us where we can get the book and where we can learn more about you if people want to connect with you.
Yeah, so the book website is beyondourcontrolbook.com, but the book is available on Amazon and Hobby Lobby stores and anywhere books can be found. And yeah, I'd love to. I love connecting with people that are reading our book or hearing from us and our story. So people can find me at Lauren A. McAfee on Twitter and Instagram, and I'd love to connect with people there. That'd be a lot of fun.
Awesome. We'll put it all in the show notes. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing your story and just helping others get through the hard, because life is hard. Yeah. And so just thank you much for sharing that with us today.
Well, thanks, Christy, for having me. It was great to be with you.
I hope you loved this interview as much as I did. I thought it was so just raw and vulnerable, but I also think you need to get her book to really dig into some of those processes. She talks about grief and lamenting and all the different things that sometimes, until something blows up in our life, we really don't know what's going on inside of us. We talked a little bit about control and that neither of us really thought we had an issue with control until something happened and we thought, oh my gosh, we are grasping for that control. So I encourage you to grab her book. You can grab it anywhere. It's called Beyond Our Control. It will be in our show notes as well. And I encourage you to also make sure that you just connect with her on her website. Thanks so much for being with us. For those of you who are in just the trenches of a hard time, I pray that this interview encouraged you and help you feel that you can get through it with others and with God. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next week. Thanks for being love in your family and in your communities.